Oferecimento Cif Limpeza Milagrosa. Parece milagre, mas é Cif.
Hoje, nosso programa fala mais uma vez das dependências aqui do Copacabana Palace, no Rio de Janeiro. E para contar uma história incrível. A maior estrela negra da história do cinema americano fica 7 anos para levantar uma mega superprodução de dimensões bíblicas, um épico africano como nunca se viu, só com mulheres no elenco, mulheres na equipe, um filme que já nasce histórico. Aí, no decisivo fim de semana de sua estreia nos Estados Unidos, na hora de seu lançamento grandioso, para onde lá vai? Los Angeles, Nova York, Paris, Tóquio, Pequim, Joanesburgo? Não, ela vem passar o weekend no Brasil. E pode crer, tem tudo a ver, faz todo sentido. Menina negra, nascida e criada na extrema pobreza de um rico estado americano, Rhode Island, ela se libertou pela arte, por um talento tão assustador quanto o mundo em que cresceu. Ela diz, eu me tornei uma atriz porque é uma fonte de cura. Ela diz isso em suas memórias, nesse livro aqui, Em Busca de Mim. Aqui ela conta a infância que passou num apartamento de 18 metros quadrados, infestado de ratos que ruíam suas poucas bonecas e à noite andavam na cama que dividia com suas 4 irmãs, enquanto seu pai alcoólatra espancava sua mãe. Isso num lugar congelante, pois não havia dinheiro para pagar aquecimento, em que o único refúgio era a escola, para onde ia sem poder tomar banho e onde o bullying racista esperava. Portanto, a violência testemunhada e sofrida pela criança, descrita nesse livro, faz as sanguinolentas batalhas do filme A Mulher Rei parecerem água com açúcar. Mas aí você vai perguntar, o que o Brasil tem a ver com a história pessoal dela e desse recém-lançado A Mulher Rei? Ora, tudo o que o Brasil tem a ver com o passado das Américas e da África, do mundo, e acreditem, com o seu futuro. E talvez a gente entenda isso melhor depois de conversar com Viola Davis. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Você entende algumas palavras de português, um pouco de português?
Um pouquinho, não.
We suppose the sound of the Portuguese language probably pops up not very good memories of your childhood. Why is it would be so?
I have a lot of wonderful memories of my childhood, but I have a lot of not so good memories. You know, I grew up in a town that had a vast array of different nationalities. And I had many Portuguese from the Azores, from the Cape Verde Islands, from Mozambique and Angola. And I think that what you're referring to is probably my first memory of a kid who would chase me after school, who was from the Cape Verde Islands, who are black and Portuguese. People don't understand the difference between race and ethnicity. And he had adopted, obviously, that sort of mentality that he did not want to be associated with African-American. He thought it was probably more low status. So I have very strong memories of Cape Verdeans who are now a part of my family, actually. My niece, I have a couple of nieces who are Cape Verdean, but he was definitely one of my bullies.
Yeah, but then you did remind him that he was black.
I did.
And
I reminded
he was quite
him. You know, it's sort of like the Emperor's New Clothes, that I was the little kid who outed him and said, you're black too. And that moment was tattooed in my mind.
But even as a young actress, you had to face a landlady who was pretty much racist, and she was from Brazil, wasn't she?
Yes, she was.
Yeah.
You know, it took me a long time to remember that, which I guess there's a part of me that's pleased with that I didn't let that sort of define me. But yes, she was Brazilian. It was my first apartment out of school when I graduated from college. And I had an apartment in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, beautiful apartment that I shared with a friend, actually. And the landlord, when she found out that I was this girl's roommate, was furious. She said she did not like black people. She did not trust them. And this is actually true. I'm not watering it down. So I couldn't bring any of my nieces and nephews over. I couldn't have any visitors whatsoever, not even my parents. Definitely not boyfriends if I had any. I'm trying to think if I had any. And every time she saw me waiting for a bus, she just assumed I was a prostitute.
But then sometime later, you met her in different circumstances.
I did. Yeah. I met her at a mall. That's interesting because there's some parts of the book maybe I chose not to remember. But I met her at a huge mall in Rhode Island, and she had a little bodega stand. I think it was jewelry she was selling. And I remember I stopped to look at the jewelry, and she very, very, very kind, very kind. And I think I probably bought something from her. And it was only after I was making the purchase that I put two and two together and realized she was my old landlord.
But now she was trying to sell you something, probably.
Yes.
Listen, congratulations for your wonderful achievement that is the Woman King.
Thank you.
And for those who haven't had the privilege, the luck to watch it, could you explain the difference between a woman king and a queen?
Well, a woman king, she basically stood side by side with King Gezo. And she basically was in charge of the military unit of the Algoji. It was sort of like with everything in that Dahomey kingdom, there was a male and female equivalent. So she definitely was not the wife of the king, which is what a queen usually is. She stood side by side with him in leading the military unit that was all female. That's the difference. I think that's the power of the term, the woman king.
If you allow me, I'll show just a piece of your tremendous performance in The Woman King. Naniska, in action.
When it rains, our ancestors weep for the pain we have felt in the dark hulls of ships bound for distant shores. When the wind blows, our ancestors push us to march into battle against those who enslave us. When it thunders, our ancestors demand we rip the shackles of doubt from our minds and fight with courage. We fight not just for today, but for the future. We are the spear of victory. We are the blade of freedom.
A mulher rei se passa em Dahomé, hoje Benin, na África, no século XIX, conta a saga de um esquadrão de elite composto só por mulheres, mulheres guerreiras, liderado pela general Naniska, o personagem de Viola. Just giving a brief synopsis. Uh-huh. And in The Woman, talking about the Portuguese language, in The Woman King, the Portuguese is the language of the slave trader,
yes.
Santa Ferreira.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But it's also the language of possible redemption and love.
Yes.
Brought by the mestizo Malik Diallo.
Yes.
When we approach this story and history in general, we must be aware that ambivalence is always a component that is always challenging us. How do we cope with that?
Well, here's the thing with history. Yes, ambivalence, absolutely. Ambiguity.
Ambiguity.
Complexity. Because what you get with history, I always say this, when I'm long gone from this earth, people will probably tell stories of me and my life. You're only going to get 40% of me. You're not going to get the private conversations. You're not going to get the intimate fights that have been in the rooms in Hollywood. You're not going to get my private thoughts. you're not going to get even some of the memories that some memories that maybe I'm so ashamed of, I'm barely sharing with myself. History and historians are usually keepers of facts and data, but they are not keepers of humanity. We do not know all of who these Agoji were. You do not know who Nansaka, she was actually one of the Agoji warriors. You don't know Nawi, even though Nawi died in 1974, I think. You don't know her every day, what makes her tick, what she lived for, who she loved, who didn't love her, her disappointments, her dreams. That task is filled with artists. We fill in the gap. We humanize these people. And it's in the humanization that you get a different perspective of history. And this story, in what you see with Woman King, is not a history lesson. It's a story. These women were recruited from the ages of 8 and 14. 8 and 14, let me repeat it. 8 and 14, because I have a 12-year-old who people are always trying to adultify because she's 5'7". These women were 8 and 14 between the ages, and they were the unwanted. They were the girls nobody wanted. They didn't want to marry them. They said no one is going to want to marry them. They're unruly. No one could control them. So they were sold into being the Agoji. And they were not allowed to marry, have sex, or have children. That, for me, is an interesting story.
It is. Fascinating. In the crucial first weekend of Woman King in the American theaters, you chose to be in Brazil. Is there anything to do with the fact that we have a significant population of Dahomey descent, even if it's not possible to measure it? Our country has been the greatest slave importer in 350 years. Almost 5 million African people were trafficked to Brazil. This was Brazil's role in history.
Yes.
What can be our redeeming role nowadays? Brazil.
Your redeeming role now is that it's just as redeeming as anyone else, which is now there is a celebration of different history. It's a celebration. I've been here for maybe 2-3 days now, and I see that there is not one community here that does not celebrate your past. And the past not as it was created by the colonists, but how it really was. There are times as an African American that you don't know what your history is. I mean, I know I never did. I just recently did my DNA test and found out I was 96% African.
From where?
From Kenya and Cameroon. Do I know anything about it? I know nothing about it. But I've been to Little Africa here. I haven't been to Bahia, which I really would love to explore. But there is an understanding and a knowledge. And also, you keep it alive here. I see it everywhere, in the communities, in the food. And in that sense, I think it's a ripe ground of people who would enjoy and receive this movie with love.
You have been always an overachiever. Is the Woman King your greatest professional and personal achievement?
Yes.
Definitely.
Absolutely, without question. I call it my magnum opus. You know, I keep repeating the same saying over and over again, is everything that you ever dreamed of is beyond your fear. And I think that I've always been afraid to be a leader. I've never seen myself as a leader. I've always seen myself in the background. When I was a kid, I suffered from extreme anxiety and shyness. It's unbelievable that I'm sitting here even talking to you when I think about my past. And then all of a sudden, I'm given this project, and I'm given this extraordinary opportunity to not just play a great character in a great story. Everything starts with a great story. But also I have to step into being the producer of it, fighting for it, fighting for the actors, fighting for the director, fighting for even feeling that it's worthy of being a movie. There is an understanding that even dark-skinned women can't lead a global box office. And that's another story, colorism, the last of the acceptable race prejudices. And then all of a sudden, I have to be in the forefront, me and my husband, fighting for this movie to be made. Me, Viola, shy, introverted Viola. And I did it.
You've done it pretty well. Mm-hmm. One reason your Finding Me book, essas são as memórias de Viola Davis, Em Busca de Mim, um livro que a gente recomenda fortemente. And you say here that an actor brings their story with them in the work. Past, present, fears, mess, humor, trauma. And I believe all these elements are clustered in The Woman King. Mm. How did you feel stepping in African soil and staying there? You was filmed in South Africa.
In Cape Town, in Durban, in mm-hmm. KwaZulu-Natal. And listen, I went to Africa for the first time when I was 25, and I was studying at Juilliard School in New York. And it was because I felt my whole spirit was stifled under the weight of Eurocentric training. I didn't know who I was anymore. I couldn't find what my voice was. And then I went to the Gambia, and it changed my life. And then once again, now I'm on the soils of Africa at 56, and it's continuing to change my life. There is something to be said with going back to your origin, sort of pressing the reset button and going back to the land that literally defined you. Everything from the red dirt to the skies to the smells, to going to the set and seeing elephants and giraffes and getting a real definition of who you are instead of a revisionist definition of who you are. And that's the sort of cesspool I've been swimming in for most of my life, fighting that sort of definition of being ugly and too dark and voice too deep and not feminine enough and always trying to respond to that racist narrative and wasting time. Because all that time I spent proving I wasn't being. And then you step foot in Africa and that's what you're being. That's what you're doing, and it cannot be recreated. I always called it, even when I was 25, I called it God's playground. So.
Nosso batom preferido acaba de ficar ainda melhor. O novo Power Stay da Avon tem a longa duração que a gente já ama, agora com novas cores e mais conforto para os lábios. São 16 horas sem precisar retocar, com uma sensação mais flexível nos lábios. Ele não gruda, não craquela, não borra e nem desbota. Sim, um mate confortável é possível. Novo batom Power Stay. O dia passa, o power fica ainda mais confortável.
You mentioned your voice. How did you find out you had the voice of your grandma's? It was her legacy to you.
Well, I found out when she came to my graduation. When I graduated from college in 1988, she came. And she said, my whole family was there. I got a big family. And they screamed when I walked across the stage with my diploma. And then afterwards, she hugged me. And she was very small. And she hugged me. And with the deepest voice, she said, I'm so proud of you, granddaughter. I'm so proud. And I was like, whoa.
I recognize that.
It was the most beautiful voice. And I was... And it was only years later that I made the connection.
You mentioned you waste so much time, and now you're sparing many kids' time with your You mentioned also Cicely Tyson and what she meant to you. And you know that now you mean the same thing and even more for many kids all around the world. What kind of inspiration you wish to be today for those kids in Brazil, in Africa?
You know, it's hard for me to receive compliments. I'm working on it. But I will say this. I want people to feel less alone. That's it. I think that aloneness has been so destructive for me, feeling like I'm just sort of walking through the world, feeling my own feelings, being ashamed of it, being ashamed of my story. I just want people to feel less alone.
Quoting Finding Me once more, you say that becoming an actor, you became an actor because it's a healing wellspring. Yeah. But it's not, when did you realize that it can be not only a healing wellspring for the actor, but for those who watch you?
I found that out immediately. That's why most people become actors. I remember I found it out immediately when I did a character who literally, it was in a play called Runaways. And she was a young girl who I think was abused most of her life and then finally ran away from her home. And the thing that you can do on stage, art is a sacred space where there's no judgment. There's no shame that exists. The only agreement is that when you enter that space, you are willing to be open to life and humanity. And so in that character, I could channel all the pain of growing up in domestic violence and sexual abuse and feeling ashamed and the bedwetting. And the more honest I was and brave I was with it, the more applause I got. And then I realized that the last sort of people who enter that sacred space is the audience. And when the audience enters that sacred space with their past, with all of their stories, with their secrets, and they see something on stage that that makes them feel, once again, less alone, then that's the beauty. That's the sweet spot.
Because there's a shallow understanding of the process that says that, no, Viola, her talent derives from the pain she endured. Mm-hmm. But there's a third element, which is acceptance, which is the audience, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, I just hate that statement. I think that it's insulting. I think it's insulting to the artist. And it's definitely insulting to me because that's what it means to be an artist. You have to bring your pain. You have to bring everything you are. If somehow you haven't connected with it, then guess what? As an audience member, I'm not going to connect with you. This is not a business about being pretty. Now, when you get on the red carpet, it may be about being pretty and looking good in the designer dresses. When you become a celebrity, maybe that's what it means. But that's not what it means to be an artist.
That's not acting, yeah, doing art. In your memories, another quote, you said, the cure was courage. And the cure to being raised amongst rats, cold, hunger. But then when you say the cure was courage, imagine a Brazilian girl, a boy, a Brazilian kid that asks you, but hungry, discriminated, and without self-esteem, where can courage come from?
I think that here's the thing with courage. I think that when people think of courage, I think they think of something that probably is bigger than what it is. Courage sometimes is being in the room and being the only one who just says, you know what? I don't believe that.
That takes a lot
of courage. Courage is owning your story. How's that? Courage is belonging to yourself. Courage sometimes is understanding that belonging to yourself and being true to yourself is more important than fitting into the masses. Courage sometimes is taking one small step. I know that because I have a lot of addicts in my family. Sometimes courage is just being sober for a week when you're recovering from addiction. Courage is a lot of things. Courage is vulnerability. How's that? Because it is in small supply sometimes in our world. Courage is the ability, it's like someone says, courage, all courage is fear said with prayers.
You have conquered, you know that feeling of winning an Oscar. You have conquered the Triple Crown, an Oscar, the Emmy, the Tony. And I wonder what goes on that young girl's mind when at these moments. Let me show the Emmy moment and then you answer.
Oh my God.
The only thing that separates women of color from anyone else is opportunity. You cannot win an Emmy for roles that are simply not there. So here's to all the writers, the awesome people that are Ben Sherwood, Paul Lee, Peter Nowak, Shonda Rhimes, people who have redefined what it means to be beautiful, to be sexy, to be a leading woman, to be black.
You'd rather not watch these things?
It's hard to watch yourself. But I watch myself. I had the courage to watch myself.
you rather watch yourself or when you're in the characters? Watching you playing?
I think they're both on equal playing fields.
Listen, this award was due for your work in How to Get Away from Murder. With Murder, and your speech recalls the scene when Annalise rips out her wig to show her real self. And why did you demand to have this scene?
Because I did not want to do a TV show and just play the character that wore the mask. When I first got the role, there were so many naysayers who said, I'd been miscast. And there was a part of me that believed that too, until I realized my big aha moment was Viola. Annalise is just a woman. She's not just a TV figurine. She's a human being. And it blew my mind open. I was so willing to abandon that very thing that I do. So the reason why I told Pete Nowak and Shonda Rhimes, Betsy Beers, I gotta take the wig off, is because I knew that once I took it off and I took off the lashes and I took off the makeup, then what you saw is what you had to write for. You had to write for Anna May, the woman who had the cornrows underneath the wig, who put the lashes on and put the whole mask on before she walked out of her brownstone early in the morning to become Annalise Keating, the kick-ass criminal defense attorney, because that is my assignment as an artist. And when I did that, then I was like, okay, I am perfectly cast. I could do that. I have the courage to do that.
So, Viola, not only you went to the School of Samba, Estação Primeira de Mangueira, but you dared to play the tambourine.
Not very well, though.
No, it seems it was not too bad. And there were some invitations that you would parade in next carnival. Would you?
Listen, they did it so well. I know I would. I would parade. I absolutely would parade. But I wouldn't look the way they looked. I mean, that was, it's still blowing my mind. I don't even know how they did the samba dancing.
The bateria
singing.
Is something like,
it's unbelievable.
So complex orchestra, as complex or more than symphonic operas or orchestras.
Mm.
Please come back to our carnival.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah.
You invite me.
I do. Now, how would you summarize your impression of Mangueira in particular and Brazil in general? It's been 3 days, I know. But you've been exposed to different...
It's vast.
It is.
It's the past meeting the present, meaning the future. You know, I feel this sort of the same way I felt when I went to Africa the first time. I was only there for a few weeks, and hundreds of different languages that I wasn't exposed to. I mean, I just felt like I cracked the surface of the vast and complicated and beautiful culture. That's what I feel about Brazil.
Right. You've been to the Cais of Valongo, which is the harbor, the port that received the biggest number of slaves coming to Brazil. How did you feel stepping those very stones?
I feel, you feel just like that. You feel like, see, that's sort of the power of even what we do as artists is you have the, you feel like you can be transported back in time. You know, and I think that's probably why I became an artist. I always wanted to touch my people. I always wanted to touch them, smell them, feel what they felt, the mystery of it, the fear of it. I always wanted that. Even when I was 6 years old, I remember, I absolutely remember the time when we were in class and they showed a film strip of slavery and they had all the images of the slaves on the film strip and they had the head wraps and they were just staring out, no smile, nothing. And everyone in the class laughed. And I remember it hurt me to my core because I was sitting there still and the only thing I kept thinking was, who are you? Speak to me. You know, yeah.
And the thing that shocked you most was the teacher telling you that they couldn't read or write.
Well, I think it was a teacher who was not educated. I didn't have the foresight to know that when I was 6 years old. I just gave her all the power of knowing who I was. And no one had told me who I was. And I didn't have any connection to who I was other than my mom and dad. You know, Tuso Mbedu, who is in The Woman King, who plays my daughter, Nawi, she said it so beautifully. She grew up in KwaZulu-Natal, and she is Zulu. And she said, even with apartheid, even with all the civil unrest that's in her country, she still knows that she's Zulu. She still knows where she comes from. And there's a sense of value and worth that comes from that. I don't have that. I mean, I have a sense of value and worth, but I don't know where I come from. And that's always a search. You're always in search of.
Beyond box office numbers, by the way, you had a good first weekend, 19
yes.
million gross,
and yes.
more than it was projected.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond box office numbers, what would be the most sound consequences of The Woman King you can dream of?
That people understand that Black women, and especially dark-skinned Black women, can lead a global box office. They do not need any white male, any white woman in a narrative. They do not need to be side by side playing anyone's best friend. That our stories literally can land and be very much a commercial hit, but by God, the testimonies that I've been given from people, everyone from older to younger, and when I'm saying younger, I mean kids. I just got a video today, kids who are as young as 8 or 9 years old.
What can you quote?
I feel seen. I feel valued. I understand now how Black women can lead, even in pain. They've been humanized. They feel like warriors. I just saw a video today of a bunch of Black women in a bathroom. Most, I guarantee you, they did not know each other. And they were all ululating, just like the Agoji. And I'm sorry. That's why I became an artist. I didn't want to just sit in the movie room with popcorn and Sour Patch Kids and a Diet Coke and just escape. I want to be moved. That's what art does. It moves, it loves, it makes you tremble, and it makes you look within yourself. And I think that we created something that is extraordinarily entertaining, 2 hours and 6 minutes. But it does what art does best.
Puts the pieces together. Dear Viola, we do appreciate, we do thank you not only for this interview, but for everything you've been doing, for our dreams, for our future. We send lots of love to you, to your family. And please be back to Carnival.
Listen, like I said, invite me.
Yeah, we will. Formally. Não deixe de assistir A Mulher Rei. Você não só vai se emocionar, como vai se divertir. E quem sabe você vai ter boas razões para querer conhecer melhor a história desse país, do Brasil. Até a próxima. Quer ver mais? Entre no Globoplay.